Thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted business and investing news source.
The reason why chemotherapy appears to cure cancer is that it makes the individual patient so ill they can no longer consume the toxic food, the root cause of the illness, and it purges the body of the heavy metals and toxins. I don't know if people are aware, but the head of cancer research and treatment in this country, here's a direct paraphrase. The most important thing to do for any cancer patient is to move as far away from a cancer treatment center as possible. To take people who are holding on with all their might and giving them the false hope that making themselves even more sick is somehow going to cure them of this is absolutely wrong. So I got to give you a hat tip for being one of the only people with the foresight and understanding to recognize it's worse than bloodletting and leech treatment, in my personal opinion.
I mean, I think you're absolutely correct. You know, it is downright medieval, and it does bring you, it does harken back that period where medical treatment was done by things like bleeding people. You know, that isn't, that chemo is not that different from that concept, and it's a rather shocking kind of thing that people can accept it with such complacency. And, you know, hopefully most people never have to be faced with a choice like that, but it's certainly something that people need to be aware of if that ever happens to themselves or a loved one.
At the risk of repeating myself, I mean, we're huge advocates of the Gershon treatment and anything that builds the immune system because, of course, at its root cause, all cancers are a response to lowered immunity. It's not to say it's obviously much more involved. There are so many aspects here. It appears to be emerging of a virus with a prion. Some people believe that it's HIV in tandem with a prions, if you want to get all technical. But at the root of it, we are huge advocates of course, reducing the glycemic levels to virtually zero, just enough to survive, because cancer thrives with three key areas. A, high glycemic levels, so you lower your blood levels, which is not terribly difficult to do. And B, obviously loves an anaerobic environment. Flood your body with as much oxygen, antioxidants and whatnot, but we also have treatments where you boost the immune system with intravenous vitamin C, medical grade. This, of course, gives your body the ability to fight off this invading force. But what you don't do is take an ill patient, tear their immune system down, whereas people who don't undergo the treatments but follow a much more healthy methodology or treatment tend to live, or we want our listeners to thrive, not just financially, but, you know, health-wise.
It is important to just basically think for yourself and not just put trust in so-called experts or the so-called, you know, common school of thought. You know, and one of the things I would say about the present times that we are in, which I view as being, you know, highly unstable, highly in flux, is that it's also a time when complacency is making daily all-time highs. And whatever has been going on with this switch in the Fed, for equity investors, it has emboldened them to go out and just buy more of the same things because they believe that, you know, the Fed has their back, central banks are on their side, and that, you know, nothing bad will ever happen again. And even, you know, to gold investors, and I'm a big believer in gold, they also think that maybe this is the beginning of the Nirvana period for gold, in which, you know, low rates, negative rates, money printing sends it back to all-time highs and beyond. To bring us back to the very beginning of our talk, we have to be prepared for very stormy weather. This is not a time for complacency. Everything you see right now is an abomination. The interest rates going to a negative territory on something like $13 trillion of debt, that is an alarm bell ringing at about 150 decibels. But you should listen to that. So many other things that we are taking for granted, we should understand, are the product of massive daily intervention by official bodies that would be considered blatantly illegal if a private entity anywhere in the world were to try to engage in it or even think about engaging in it for 5 minutes, ticking day to day. It's what keeps the lights on. So I think people should consider the likelihood of stormy weather, number one. And number two, you know, what is going to be my protection and my strategy in the face of that stormy weather? And that brings out a whole bunch of other things, which, you know, I don't know if we have enough time to go into, but I think the beginning is recognizing where you are and thinking about the actual risk environment that we are in and the nature of the system that we live in, all of which are things that just happen to be the way they are, and it's a product of the times we are in. But we are living in an extraordinary time because it happens to be, in my opinion, the very end of the life cycle of the financial system that we have enjoyed, for better or for worse, for 50 years. Opportunity of a lifetime, because, Chris, this doesn't happen every lifetime. We have to understand the scale of what is in front of us. Financial systems and global currencies do not disintegrate every lifetime.
Obviously, this is a much bigger cycle you're talking about. The typical investor, they are short-term focused. Sadly, our policymakers have a short-term focus. Maybe the system's just set up that way. Maybe we're wired that way. The difficulty is, I think, wrapping one's mind around the enormity of what we're facing. Perhaps no one alive can really recall, or very few, the end of the Civil War and the fallout of the many inflations and economic devastation following that. It's very difficult. I mean, we could be facing something that rivals the Great Depression and the Great Recession. Can you give us your thoughts on contingency plans?
First of all, I think that the time scale of one of these events is similar to one of those comets that just come into our solar system, you know, every few hundred years. It's that kind of a time scale. And it will reshape, you know, our lives, and it will reshape our future, much as what happened in 1971 did. So, you know, we think of a lot of these things as, you know, just the way it was supposed to be. But, you know, so much of what happened had everything to do with what occurred, I mean, in our economy, had everything to do with what occurred in 1971. So people should never underestimate, you know, what could be rearranged by the kind of transition we go through from here. And, you know, in terms of the answers, Chris, I think, you know, very few people, if anyone, including myself, have the answers. But we can look back at history and see little glimpses of things that happened in the past that pertain to what is going on now. So I'll throw out a couple of things for people to consider. And since and I'll start with gold, because obviously there are people in your audience who are interested in that subject. So here's one of the first things I would throw out when it comes to gold, which is, do most people understand what the market cap of gold is? So if you actually do that exercise, it tacks back to the concept of big numbers. What we know of in terms of the physical gold that has been taken out of the crust of the earth from the beginning of a period that goes back about 5 or 6,000 years is that it is something around 180,000 metric tons, where a metric ton equals exactly 1,000 kilograms. So for people who want to run the numbers, that's more or less what you're looking at. It's not a great deal of metal if you put it all in one place. And people have done various pictorial diagrams of what such a pile would look like. And it isn't that large in terms of its cubic volume. But that's all the gold that exists. And if you looked at it from a market cap point of view, I believe it's somewhere around $8 trillion U.S. dollars at the present price. So right off the bat, that makes it a very large asset in the whole scheme of things. It would mean that it's more than, you know, all of Apple, all of Google, all of Amazon, all of Facebook, and a few others combined. And in terms of daily volume, it's even bigger than that. So that's something to consider, because when you talk about the price of that metal going up, it takes a lot of activity, a lot of capital to move the needle on something that big, just like it does to move the needle on an Amazon or a Google or something like that. But here's another interesting thing. It turns out that as big as the physical gold sphere is, the sphere of paper gold is much, much, much larger. Now, paper gold didn't even exist until sometime in the mid-1980s, I believe. And it was a response on the part of policymakers that, you know, we're trying to manage outcomes. Central banks basically made their gold available to the marketplace as a way of keeping, quote unquote, an orderly market. And they introduced the concept of paper gold, which was basically a way of putting gold into the marketplace without selling your own gold, because the other interesting thing about central banks is they are loath to sell their gold. Why should they, when they can create money with a computer keystroke? Why would you ever sell gold for another currency when that currency can be conjured up at will to any amount you desire? So the act of a central bank selling gold is clearly for a non-economic purpose. This non-economic purpose was what gave birth to paper gold. So the reason I brought that up, Chris, is that because it is actually a number which I find rather stupefying, one of the things that really makes an impression on me. So depending on which expert you talk to, because there are people that have tried to put a scale on how much paper gold is really out there. And just to make sure people know what I mean by paper gold is a piece of paper that basically says, I owe you, Chris, 10 ounces of gold. And rather than you buying 10 ounces of gold and figuring out where you're going to put it, how you're going to insure it, it may just be easier for you to buy a piece of paper and stick it in your brokerage account and just rely that the person who made you that promise is going to fulfill that promise. And, you know, that sounds like a pretty, you know, normal kind of concept. But the problem is, what if that concept goes totally haywire in the sense that you end up making more promises than all the physical gold that exists on planet Earth. So, tacking back a little bit, so those experts who've tried to enumerate the open interest or the outstanding amount of paper promises to deliver gold, by varying accounts, it could be as much as 500 times the amount of physical gold that actually exists. Well, the implications of that are rather shocking because obviously those promises have no physical way to ever perform. And yet investors, we have satisfied the investor demand for gold largely through the production of this paper, which is conceptually flawed and absolutely not real gold. So my point is that, you know, you have to think about when we reach this stormy weather, what is going to happen to certain assets? And I don't pretend to have the answer, but you would think that gold would be a natural beneficiary because it is not a form of debt. It is pure equity. It has no counterparty risk, and it has no debasement risk. That all sounds fine to me, and it sounds like a green light as to why you should own gold. The problem, however, is in the real world, there is gold, and there is this enormous creature called paper gold that just towers over the physical gold. And so, you know, when things go bad, they all go bad. And that paper gold is definitely going to go bad because it's a debt instrument. So the question is, what happens? And, you know, I don't know what happens, but I want to suggest to people in terms of the category of being prepared that rather than think that because the world's central banks have now more or less, you know, pulled up the flag and it looked like they've given up in the sense that they're ready to do more rate easing, they're ready to print money, they're ready to do literally what Mario Draghi said is whatever it takes. Rather than that being the green light for gold to just go to the moon, it might actually go down first. And the reason is there is a whole lot of financial trouble that takes place if gold goes up too high or too fast, which is that it literally imperils the financial system. And it's something that I didn't think about before because I thought, you know, gold is always the antidote to a problem in the financial system. And it might be, but you might find that the gold market gets rather ill first before it gets better, before it gets a lot better, because of this paper gold and the likelihood that you have to do literally whatever it takes to keep it alive. It won't be kept alive indefinitely because it can't be. It's another credit instrument and it's reached, you know, beyond its own limits. But in the effort to keep it alive, we may end up killing the gold market temporarily. It'll come back to life for sure, because it holds the key to resetting the financial system later after a failure. But, you know, looking back at history, I'll throw out a couple of things. One is, how many people remember what happened in England in the late 1990s when Gordon Brown was the Chancellor of the Exchequer and he made the decision to sell off half of England's gold at what turned out to be the very bottom price of a, you know, decade or more long bear market in gold. You know, basically my message is be prepared for stormy weather, that, you know, even though, you know, you think things should work out a certain way, It doesn't mean that you take a side trip in the absolutely, you know, opposite direction first. And I see that potential in gold as I do in so many other things. The difference with gold is that, you know, in terms of being a long-term wealth asset, there's no question that it will be the most preeminent wealth asset going forward once again, a role that it's had pretty much since the beginning of financial time. So while it may endure some tough sledding, it will come back, and it'll come back with a vengeance. But one should be prepared for that because we're just not in normal times. I don't think the same thing could be said for stocks. I certainly don't think the same thing could be said for bonds with, you know, negative interest rates or extremely low interest rates. If people look at a history of sovereign debt, what they'll see is really a history of sovereign debt default. And I think given the kind of numbers we have with debt, you know, people should realize that de facto, all of these governments are insolvent right now. So it's hard to conjure up a rosy scenario for any bond that people are buying at a negative interest rate or at a nominal interest rate. That's not going to stand the test of time well. And, you know, equities will have some very tough sledding ahead. I just think that we're in a period of enormous change. We are at a period where we're near the end game of our financial system.
There's always a bull market somewhere. Now, during the Great Recession, gold, I feel, held its own. It peaked to trough wasn't more than a 30% decline, a sideways action with just gold itself, not the shares. However, the safe haven turned out to be, obviously, short-term debt, treasury bond. They held up surprisingly well in the U.S. dollar. This time around, it looks like we're looking at something far more serious. Do you have any other safe havens, or is this going to be such a crack-up? There's no life jackets, there's no life preservers, there's no lifeboats for the typical portfolio.
That is certainly a question I ask myself every day. And again, I don't have all the answers, but I look to the past and I look to people that have had a lot of experience and have lived through some difficult times. I would encourage people in your audience, Chris, to listen to an interview with a person that isn't very well known, except in certain financial circles. His name is Robert Wilson. And for people that know him, he has a reputation of having been maybe the greatest short seller of all time. He's probably modest enough not to call himself that way, but and I believe he's probably in his mid-80s right now, and he's long, you know, given up an active role in the investment world. But in the time that he was active, he was, you know, a breed apart. But one person interviewed him in his whole career, and you can find the transcript of that interview by Googling his name. I believe his middle initial is either W or D. But if you Googled Robert W. Wilson, short seller, or something like that, you'll find this interview, and you can read through the transcript. But basically, you know, what he said is that, you know, he said, first of all, and you have to remember, he was probably the world's greatest short seller. But he basically said that over his lifetime, looking back at everything that he did, he probably just broke even with his short selling. But one caveat, which was that when things went bad, that became the cash that he could deploy in buying up the really good things that he wanted to be long. And that's an interesting point. because when things go really bad, they usually go bad with everything, because markets are governed by human emotion more than anything, especially during, you know, some kind of a panic or whatever. And, you know, a portfolio that is designed with, you know, things that people are short are things that naturally become the cash or the value that is used to buy things that become ridiculously cheap that you know and understand. And I think we're coming up to a period like that. So, you know, maybe short-term bonds are a good thing as a substitute to being short a bunch of things. You know, depending on, you know, are we going into normal kind of times, and is it going to be a garden variety crisis or something different than that? But, you know, I love to hear the stories and the experiences of people that have had legendary experiences, like this guy, Robert Wilson. And, you know, I think we have a lot to learn about the future by looking at the past and seeing, you know, where we came from, and give us an idea of where we are.
All right, John Scursi, partner and portfolio manager, founder of Corona Associates Capital Management. If you could tell us what folks will find when we navigate our web browsers to your website, some of the neat services and excellent things we'll find there.
We try to update what we're doing and what we're thinking as much as we can. We could probably do more of it, you know, and we have been focused on gold, and we have been focused on some short selling opportunities, and you know, we remain very focused on this period of change that we are in, and trying to take advantage of it as best we can. And, you know, we are prepared for stormy weather, and I think everyone else should be as well. But I would encourage anyone that would like to reach out to us to contact us either by phone or email, and we'd love to chat with anyone that has any questions or comments. And, you know, we live in a community of other people, and I always welcome, you know, other people's thoughts and formats like your show, Chris, because it's wonderful for people to exchange ideas, and you get, you know, great ideas and great confirmation of other things that you're seeing by interacting with other people. It's a great thing. I always encourage that.
The dialogue tends to spark commentary. You might say infotainment. Let's get another update as soon as possible.
Well, I am already looking forward to that, and all the very best to you, Chris. Thank you again.
Blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Apmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as
as easy as a single mouse click.
Vault Chain
offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Shopping for fine jewelry just got easier. GoldSeek.com has identified the most successful jewelry brand to launch in recent times. Many Jewelry is rewriting the way consumers buy fine jewelry. Integrity Craftsmanship, the only company to sell 24-karat gold and platinum jewelry, avoiding confusing alloys and gems, a true precious metals investment. Many Jewelry's disruptive business model embraces Franco-American craftsmanship and direct-to-consumer economics, rapidly disrupting the $20 billion monopoly, just like Amazon and Uber. The sky is the limit with $1 billion of jewelry purchases daily for loved ones and those special occasions. Many Jewelry is an innovator positioned to capture market share, with annual sales growth in the industry topping $30 billion by 2021. Many Jewelry coined the term investment jewelry, pricing by the gram, transparently disclosing its profit margins, a truer investment in pure gold or platinum. Similar to real estate, even artwork, Many Jewelry has a weighted value easily calculated, ensuring value wealth as a long-term investment. With sales in 60 countries around the globe, 20,000 orders already, don't miss out on the explosive growth potential. Many Jewelry trades under the symbols MENE on the Toronto Exchange and in the US MENEF. Remember to sign up to Many's Shareholder Club to receive shareholder news, updates, and special discount codes for jewelry purchases. Remember, Many Jewelry.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.